This interview is part of a research study produced by FT Longitude in partnership with London Stock Exchange Group.
Data is the lifeblood of financial services. And yet, right across the sector, organisations are grappling with vast webs of legacy technology, making data difficult to trace, manage, and analyse, and putting leaders on the back foot at many times in today's volatile macroeconomic environment. So how can financial services organisations find liberation within legacy technologies and maintain a competitive edge in a changing market landscape? I'm Shanice Henry, Senior Editor at FT Longitude, and in this conversation, we'll explore how business leaders can transform legacy tech platforms to gain operational efficiency and resilience. Joining me to discuss this is Matt Plant, Head of Technology Strategy and Architecture at AustralianSuper. Welcome, Matt.
Thanks, Shanice. Thanks for having me. Really excited to be here.
So Matt, it would be great if you could start by giving our listeners an overview of AustralianSuper, its role, its place in the Australian market, and also a bit of a flavour for its current trajectory as well.
We are the largest superannuation provider in Australia, which for the rest of the world is pension or 401k in the US. Effectively, the system here works a little bit different to most places around the world in that we have what's called a defined contribution system. So every month, a portion of everyone's salary legally must get paid into their superannuation balance to grow their balance through to retirement. The way we've kind of structured our kind of future view is we created a few years ago a 2030 vision to drive where we wanted to be and then wrapped a business and then technology strategy around that to support that. That's meant a few key things for us. That's meant an internalization of investment management. So only 10 years ago now, we didn't have investment management internal. We ran a sort of manager of managers, manager of assets type model. And we've kind of driven an internalization of that to be able to build that scale. It's positioned us to grow internationally. So although we only support members in Australia, we've actually grown our business into London and New York and Beijing to provide access to investments in those locations at the scale we're operating at.
And you were mentioning there, of course, that technology transformation is, you know, woven into that plan and is quite an integral part of delivering better outcomes for your members. So it would be good to pivot here and talk a bit more about how AustralianSuper is approaching technology transformation. You know, how is it embracing the more emerging or new technologies with addressing tech debt or, you know, the legacy stack tweaks that need to be done for operational changes versus those, you know, innovative, you know, sort of more quantum leap jumps in new technology. It would be great to hear how you're approaching tech transformation as part of this mission to grow by 2030.
Over the last iteration of that three-year strategy, over the last 3 years, one of the things we've really tried to do is increase the correlation between the business strategy and the tech strategy. So really drive our decision-making around what the business is doing and what the business needs for the future, and then really invest in both the key foundational aspects we need, but then how we can sort of, I guess, transform some of those legacy assets. One of the ways we approached that over the last 3 years is we were sort of gingerly, I would say, moving into the cloud. We had a few things in the cloud. We had still a large footprint on-prem, and we were taking, I would say, a sort of slow and steady approach to that. And that was probably partly in reflection of our skills at the time and the workforce training uplift that goes into actually moving into the cloud, but also in reflection to sort of the regulatory environment. The regulators wanted us to take that sort of very structured, sort of slow approach and understand what we needed to do. About 3 years ago now, we actually made the decision to pivot that and actually move quite aggressively. So once we'd built our runway and understanding of the cloud environment and how we could leverage it, I think we realized that we were quite quickly going to be in a position where we were splitting our workforce on two different, completely different technology stacks. We were splitting our investment into two completely different worlds to refresh our CapEx infrastructure in data centers whilst also trying to build out stuff in the cloud. So we accelerated that. We drove a very aggressive timeline to get all of our assets into the cloud and actually decommission our data centers. Only a few years ago, we had 7 data centers. We've now decommissioned all of that, and we've made a full shift into the cloud environment with just some networking aspects that sit in a data center that we effectively have someone else manage now. So it's enabled us to really focus our technology change to the business needs, as opposed to worrying so much about life cycle of hardware and things like that in the data centers. And that's been really beneficial. It's allowed us to innovate more quickly. We've spun up new technologies. We've now been much more aggressive in our usage of the newer technologies coming along now around co-pilots and AI and leveraging those ecosystems in the cloud, as well as the data offerings that are coming from both our cloud provider, but also our partners. It's enabled us to really kind of make a strategic shift in some of that.
And as you mentioned, when you have a tech architecture, you need to, you know, take one bite at a time. You need to sort of work out and prioritize what elements were going to be spun up and iterated first and sort of build on that. And that, you know, seems to be a way that a lot of companies have approached tech transformation previously, but that can lead to sort of a bit of a piecemeal approach. You know, there's pros and cons to that. And then, of course, you're left with a legacy system that, you know, in some areas, the integration's great, and in others, it's not as great. So it would be good to hear about the landscape of legacy systems at Australian Super, and more specifically, the impact that that has on decision-making and the use of data. Are there any ways that the legacy systems at Australian Super impact your approach to decision-making that your employees take, and how data is used and leveraged to, you know, meet the needs of your members?
Yeah, 100%. We've got plenty of examples of that. When you talked about prioritization there and thinking about that in the legacy standpoint, I think one of the challenges in an organization that is, we are very fortunate that we're growing quite quickly, is that, and I'm sure it's the case for many people, is that I could write 100 business cases that would stack up from like a risk or a return on investment perspective. That isn't the challenge, actually writing the business case to justify what we need to do. It's actually, how do we take those 100 things and actually identify the 5 to 10 that are we need to ruthlessly focus on, because they're the ones that are going to strategically enable the business. And some of that is obviously new stuff, but as you say, some of that is how do we manage some of the legacy assets. Data is a key, I would say, both advantage but also challenge for us, like it is, I'm sure, for everyone. We've got, particularly in our member space, we've got some assets that we're looking to really heavily refresh from a member standpoint. We took the approach as we moved into the cloud to, we did some modernization on those assets, but kept it, I would say, fairly focused, and really, really drove how do we build our sort of our target state ecosystem for this to be able to port that into. And one of the things that we did, which I think is hard, and I'm sure we could have, you know, done, you know, more on this, but it's a really key factor for me, is really thinking about what you're doing, being clear on what you're doing from like a, this is a contain, this is a retire, this is an invest, so a disposition on those assets, and then being super clear on the communication with that. One of the ways we're sort of approaching that more recently, which is going to be a core element, I think, of our next strategy, is actually leveraging a much more mesh-based view of the world. If I was to probably have had this conversation even a year ago, I would have said we were going to bring more of our data together into a single repository. And I would have said we were going to store that centrally, and we were going to improve our governance and lineage over that data. And then we were going to be able to do all of those amazing things that our business needs and wants to be able to give that best possible outcome to our members. I think that's pivoting. I think over the last few years, we've started to see, and particularly in the last 6 months, we're seeing both from the technology vendors, but also from all of our partners, a real strong shift to providing not just a repository for that data, but being able to provide a mesh-based view of how we can bring that data together. So we can leave that data in all of those legacy repositories and those legacy solutions, but just surface up what we need just in time to be able to bring that data together to answer specific questions. That then becomes a little bit easier for us to manage from a data governance perspective. It means we don't have to necessarily fully change that legacy asset. We can keep that legacy asset doing what it does best, but we can ring fence not having to put a whole bunch of analytics into that platform or AI into that platform. We can bring that through a mesh to be able to provide that. And one of the other key things we're focused on there is how can we use that to enable kind of AI-based, you know, interactions across this data to our users. You know, there's some fantastic use cases out there at the moment where people are using co-pilots and various other LLM-based technologies to be able to interrogate data that isn't in that single repository, being able to send out that message to all the different downstream systems to get the queries back and then model that back into some way that is useful for obviously the person or the system asking that query. And I think that's one of the things we're looking to do with our legacy assets is some of them we're modernizing, some of them we're trying to leapfrog and bring it into, you know, a really modern asset, and some we're just saying it's probably really we're just going to contain it. Like, it's not that we're going to necessarily get rid of this asset in the short term, but in using some of the newer, more innovative technologies and approaches, we can ring fence the impact of not modernizing this asset until we actually need to. So that's one of the approaches we're taking.
Do you have any rules of thumb for knowing or being able to spot what bucket a piece of tech would fit into? Like you were saying there, whether it needs to be modernized, whether it needs to just be ring-fenced for the moment, or maybe looking at another way forward. Are there any sort of indicators that you look for to say, right, that one goes in this group?
We're obviously constantly in conversations with our key partners, both technology, investment, member partners are the key partners that provide, you know, a huge part of our ecosystem for us. And if they happen to come along with a piece of technology that we think would be superior than that legacy asset and provides kind of a really good value add to the business, then that's something we generally try to explore. So always looking for opportunities to mean that we don't have to manage that legacy asset in the future and we can leverage the expertise of our key partners in that. Where we've got to actually do the work to, say, modernize the actual tech underlying ourselves, I think the key thing we're looking for is probably two things. We're looking at either, is there a risk-based lens here that we kind of, you know, we have to do it. You know, there's just, you know, from a risk standpoint, we need to do it because we've got to modernize to reduce some operational risk, or there's some operational flows that because of this legacy asset are now happening manually or off platform, and that's introducing some kind of operational risk for us. We're obviously really ruthlessly trying to make sure we minimize those operational risks, because that's a key disadvantage to us compared to our competitors if we don't do that. And then the third thing is looking at, is this asset something that could be of a strategic advantage and aligned to our strategy if we modernized it? So if, you know, in our strategy, we're obviously looking to scale to an increased number of members, as an example, move to sort of, you know, over 4 million members. At that point, scale benefits becomes a key part of our strategy. We need to drive automation. We need to drive our ability to drive a lower cost to member into our very sort of DNA. That's a really important aspect for us. If it doesn't meet those things, if it's not a key part of enabling our strategy, there's not a risk driver, and there's not some fantastic piece that maybe lowers our overall cost of ownership for this, then often we try and ring fence and work out how we can manage the data in and out of that to provide the benefits we need without having to invest in that area.
So finally, Matt, as we look to close, I think we've had a lot of lessons learned in the discussion today, but it would be great if you could distill it down to maybe your top golden rule that you'd like to share with other technology leaders in this sector around approaching legacy tech transformation in a way that will optimize outcomes and as streamlined as possible.
Yeah, I think for me, it's really about driving back to that business value. I think it's very easy as a technology strategist to go, oh yeah, we're just going to modernize everything and everything's going to go to target state. But really for me, it's constantly ruthlessly trying to remind myself when I'm making these decisions and doing this analysis with the team, what is the business outcome we're trying to achieve? Is modernizing this going to drive the outcome? Or can I just take a sub part of it and modernize? And what are the goals I'm trying to achieve from that? Because the goals isn't just modernize the tech. The goals are often more, you know, minimize risk, to optimize from a security perspective, to remove legacy technology because of the implications from a security standpoint or a regulatory view on that. So how can we achieve those goals without necessarily over-investing in that solution? That's really... it sounds really simple, but it's actually quite hard to do, to constantly bring yourself back to what are the goals and objectives that I'm actually trying to achieve here. It really boils down to that. And one of the things we've achieved as an example for that in the cloud is, as we moved a lot of those legacy assets into the cloud, even the ones we did, what most refer to as a lift and shift, we kind of did a lift and cleanse. We moved everything as is, maybe from a business standpoint, but underlying, we made a sequence of changes to enable our control landscape to be better. So we moved to a standard hardened version of the OS and things like that, which was sometimes quite hard with those legacy platforms. But just making those changes and enabled us to be in a position to manage our control plane really well, which obviously in the FS space is incredibly critical, both for our own risk management, but obviously, you know, maintaining that with our members and obviously with our regulators. So looking for those opportunities to improve, really ruthlessly focusing on what the outcome you're trying to achieve, as opposed to just jumping forward and saying, we need to modernize all of these old assets because they're causing us challenges. It's much easier said than done, but you've got to really keep reinforcing that through every step of the way.
Well, Matt, thanks so much for your time today. It's been incredibly fascinating to chat with you. Wishing you and Australian Super all the best with your growth plans to 2030 as well.
Thank you very much, Janice. Really appreciate it.
This interview is part of a research study produced by FT Longitude in partnership with London Stock Exchange Group.